Morning Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Ten News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. The big news of the day yesterday, late in the day, 5 o'clock news drop, was that the mayor, D.C. Reeves, has in fact selected the police chief from Grand Rapids to be the new police chief for Pensacola. Instead of the local, who is the acting deputy chief right now, which is Eric Goss, he chose Eric Winstrom. I always feel it's not fair. Pensacola and Escambia County, and even Santa Rosa, have this habit of putting very similar names in places where you're supposed to be able to distinguish them from each other. We used to have a Wilson Robertson on the county commission and a Grover Robinson, and sometimes even Lumen May would always say Robinson in order to like emphasize the difference. It seems like we get this a lot. I don't know why. You know, we have Ashley Hoffberger and Steve Stroberger on the, and we have a Steve Stroberger and Steve Berry on the board. Why? I don't know why. We can't come up with a little, maybe we need an ordinance that's like, you know, no two people shall have the same name in any group of five or fewer that's up for the same office or in the same office. I don't know how you word this, but it seems like a problem. So Eric with a K, Goss, and Eric with a C, Winstrom, were your two out of the, there's a third one also from Tampa. But look, people I know, a lot of people, the expressed sentiment on social media is what an idiot that he made this wrong decision. But I do want to remind you that it is my opinion that the people who talk the most on social media, are not always the most informed of the entire population. And the people who are often the most informed are not necessarily the people who say much. And, you know, I'll just use myself as an example. I think objectively I'm fairly well informed about things in Pensacola. If you disagree, that's fine. We can have a difference of opinion. But you haven't seen me comment on this on social media, on any of the news sites, what's happened in Pensacola, any of the Facebook groups, any of that stuff. And so my voice is silent. The only place I talked about it online is that somebody kind of, on a post I made on something that was unrelated, they brought it up and I answered them. And I said to the person who was upset that this decision got made, and I said, well, did you watch the interviews? Did you watch the last interview with the actual selection committee? Based on that, this doesn't surprise me at all. And the longer it went, the less surprising it seemed to me, because if the mayor was going to name Chief Goss, he would have named him pretty quickly, because that would have been the easiest, least politically risky. You don't make anybody angry. Everybody thinks, okay, good. The police union came out in favor of Chief Goss. Everybody here locally who know him, we like him. Chief, you know, Eric's a good guy, long experience in the department. And if the mayor wanted to do the easiest thing he could have done, then he would have named Eric Goss. And we could have been done. You know, his Mardi Gras crew would have been happy, and all the people in the police department right now would have been happy, or most of them would have been happy. You know, okay. But there's that pesky question about experience, qualifications, prospect for the future, and how you perform in a job interview. And if you watched these interviews, it's not at all surprising that the mayor would choose another Eric Winstrom, for the chief of police in Grand Rapids, because he's got, you know, 21 years in Chicago, rising to the rank of commander, overseeing as a captain of a 400-person division at one point, and a 200-person division in another area, you know, working child crimes. He's a lawyer. He actually went to become a cop to kind of try to reform policing, because he was upset about what happened to his brother with the police. And somebody said, if you really want to, you know, help policing be better, you got to do it from the inside. So he went and became a cop. After 21 years in Chicago, and worked in the projects in Chicago, so he's got a, you know, fair amount of experience. He goes to Grand Rapids, where he grows the force from 260 it had fallen to, 300 was the budget, and then went up to 312 under his tenure. So as an outsider, he went into Grand Rapids and helped them do better. And I mean, I've heard him talk. I think he's a very smart guy. I think he is has the great potential to be a good leader and has shown leadership capability in the past. And frankly, in the interview process, if you put them side by side, and keep in mind, I know Eric. I like Eric. Okay. It was no contest. It was, I mean, really, there was no comparison. The thing that would make you pick Goss is that he's from here and that he's grown up in the Pensacola Police Department. And you want people to believe that, you know, internal candidates can go all the way to the chief. That's true. And you want people who understand our culture and understand our sort of way of life, you know, and love the area. And all of that's true. But how much does that count for when you're talking about a fairly significant experience and performance gap? I mean, Eric's never been the chief of police. Eric Goss. Goss is, and the only reason I'm referring to him as last names, I would just call him Eric, but they're both Eric, you know, so that doesn't really help. So if I say Eric, I'm probably talking about Chief Goss and by mistake. And he's, you know, he's never run a department. And he might be great when he does, but he just doesn't have the experience of doing that. Whereas Chief Winstrom absolutely has that experience and a track record to prove that he can run a department, especially as an outsider in Grand Rapids, and make it great. There's just no comparison. And the analogy there, the illustration, I don't know, thought experiment, whatever you want to call it, that I used when all this happened a couple of weeks ago when they were going through their final round of interviews, I said, if these three candidates, and I know I'm not talking about the Tampa guy, but he's also very capable, showed better and had better experience than Chief Goss. He's the one who had retired and now is coming back to policing, okay? But I said, if these three candidates were competing for police chief of some comparable size city that's not us, you know, any city of 50,000 anywhere in the U.S., in North Carolina, in Oregon, in Illinois, in New Jersey, in Texas, if it weren't that he's from Pensacola, this wouldn't even be a question. I say this just to give you a sense of sort of what I think are the facts of the case. Chief Goss wouldn't even be in a finalist list because the experience gap, the capability gap, and the performance gap on the interviews is so different. So here's my theory, okay? I'm going to talk to DC today at 7:35. We'll ask him to explain. And he's written a letter to the, he wrote the first thing he did was tell the folks at PPD and say, hey, here's what I've decided, and here's my reasoning why. And he says he hopes that the next 20 chiefs of police come from the Pensacola Police Department. He likes that idea, but just Chief Goss didn't have the level of experience. He's, you know, Chrisman should have been. He should have been the chief when Grover hired my brain. Randall, Chief Randall. But he didn't. I think Grover made a mistake. I thought he made a mistake at the time. I raised my concerns at the time. That turns out to have been a mistake. I mean, you know, we've had problems with Randall, and I like Chief Randall, but, you know, he was not the right guy for a variety of reasons. Kevin Chrisman should have been the chief. He was ready to be the chief. He was the deputy chief. He had experience. It was perfect, but Grover went a different way. It was a mistake. The problem now is that the guy that you'd like to have be that chief, you know, Kevin Chrisman, had a health issue that made it so he couldn't be the chief. He's actually been on leave for a while, and he's now retired out of policing. You know, in an ideal world, we go back and make him the chief. And over time, maybe Goss would have become the deputy chief since Christian Brown was wanting to retire. But it would have been better and prepared. And, well, we don't have that option. And in a couple of years, you know, whenever Chief Winstrom, depending on how long he stays with us or retires here or whatever, you know, Eric's going to be the chief. Almost certainly. Eric Goss. So, in fact, he says in the letter, I want to be clear, I fully expect to see him serve as chief of the department for the future. Eric Goss. So here's the sort of the way I think about this. PPD is good. Eric Goss would have continued that tradition, and I don't think much would have changed within the department. That is a good department, a very good department. What I think the mayor is thinking about Chief Winstrom is, here we have a guy with tremendous experience, leadership capability, and lots of knowledge from outside that can come and really not just kind of keep it going at the same rate, but improve it everywhere it can possibly be improved. We want PPD not to just be the good, very good thing that it is right now. We want it to be amazing. And I think this hire is a lot about that. And, you know, look, maybe it doesn't work out. But if it doesn't work out, you have Chief Goss who can take over if that turns out to be. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I'm going to have a chance to talk to him today, the new chief, incoming chief. We'll have that interview for you tomorrow, 7:35. He's going out of town. And also, by the way, just a side note, I won't be here tomorrow and Friday, but that interview we should have for you at this time. So I know sometimes, you know, you come on at 5 o'clock, you're like, where's Andrew? Well, the 7:35 segment, I'll be here, you know, like with that interview for you. If you want to disagree with me, feel free. No problem. You know me, I never mind people disagreeing with me. And I know a lot of people are very upset. I don't think everybody's upset. I hate having to do this. I love Pensacola Police. I do. I hate the idea that a lot of my really good friends on the force are really in disagreement with me over this. And I hate having to go on the air and, you know, upset people or say something they don't want to hear. And frankly, if all of the folks inside PPD did not come out so strongly for Goss, like, you expect that. You know, he's our guy. We've known him for 20 years. We've been in the trenches with him. He's right. And I mean, what would it say about a person if that weren't the case? Now, that doesn't indicate anything bad. I'm just saying, like, that's not surprising. That's very normal. And I know those folks are angry, bitter, disappointed, you know, to some degree. I think there are also others who are happy because those who watch the interviews and objectively looked at him are like, oh, man, I don't know. He looks really good. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, you know. Time will tell. Some of us are going to be right and some of us are going to be wrong. But the folks that I have talked to that were, you know, not invested in a relationship they already had, okay, a lot of them who objectively looked at these interviews and compared these candidates thought, yeah, this is really not this is not that close. And again, this will give Chief Goss the chance to, because Kristen Brown is going to be the deputy chief for now, but she's retiring soon. So he'll be back in the deputy chief position pretty quickly, and he'll start getting experiences running the agency as a deputy chief, right? Which is good for everybody. 522 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Not an error so much, maybe, I don't know, on my part. Yesterday we talked about the library story and the guns being banned at the public libraries in Escambia County by the West Florida Public Library Board of Governors. And I said, well, you know, A, that's an illegal rule. I mean, you're allowed to carry a gun into a library, even openly. Whether you think that's a smart idea or not, it is a legal idea, which, of course, the, you know, sheriff yesterday confirmed for us. But it turns out that the rule that went into effect is actually almost a more permissive rule, the way it's written. Because, yes, the new rule says firearms and weapons are not permitted inside the library, and then there's a follow-on, and the follow-on is important. But the old rule up until January was you should expect an environment free of weapons. It was a weapons-free zone, like they had prohibited weapons before, which is not lawful. Like, you could carry a gun into the library, and then they'd call somebody, and then they'd say, well, no, but here's the law, I hope. Or you'd have to do the Stan McDaniels and get arrested and show that, I mean, it'd be a pretty quick trial because the judge would be like, yeah, you can't prohibit that. So the new one, firearms and weapons are not permitted inside the library except as allowed by state law. And I mentioned yesterday that, you know, I don't know why this is even there because firearms are allowed inside the library unless prohibited by state law is really the way that it should say. But I know what they want to do is they want to discourage it, and I don't really think it's their purview to even discourage it. Library staff may contact law enforcement if an individual fails to comply with applicable state law or library policy. And then, of course, law enforcement's going to come and say, yeah, it's fine. But the way this is written is actually kind of the except as allowed by state law, as in at the time this was put into place, would have been concealed carry. And so it's saying no. It's kind of saying no open carry, if you read between the lines a little bit, which would have been true at the time it was passed, not true as of January, you know, as of last summer. Anyway, so my understanding had been that the Board of Governors had come in and put in a prohibition it turns out that, you know, the existing illegal prohibition had been softened a little bit. Of course, what I'd like to see them do is, you know, change it and really just kind of get rid of all of this because they can't make this rule and they can't enforce it. 525 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
It all comes down to this, folks.
Yep, the entire season is on the line.
But my throat has officially thrown in the towel.
Sounds like you need Vicks VapoCool drops. They're max strength, hand vaporized sore throat pain.
Whoa! These VapoCool drops hit fast!
Speaking of fast, did you just see that play?
Yeah, he vaporized that ball.
That pun should have come with a penalty.
Vaporize sore throat pain with Vicks VapoCool drops. Use as directed.
Tired of your roof playing peekaboo with the rain? Call Quality Roofing. They fix leaks faster than your neighbor borrows your lawnmower.
Thank you, neighbor.
Whether it's storm damage or shingles gone wild, their expert team handles it all, no duct tape required. With top quality materials and service so good, even your mother-in-law will approve, especially their lifetime workman warranty. Don't wait for your ceiling to start drip-dropping. Call Quality Roofing Solutions. Quality Roofing Solutions, because your house deserves a hat that actually fits.
This is the story of the one. As an HVAC technician, he and his digital multimeter are in high demand. So when a noisy office HVAC turns out to be a failing blower motor, he doesn't break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product information, he selects the product he needs to keep everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're busy. You just need to know what's happening.
What's happening?
Pensacola Right Now
with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Remember what they say, all work and no play?
All sunshine makes a desert, so the Arabs say.
We're looking at the story about Savannah Guthrie's mom, and they're showing scenes of, I guess, the house in Arizona, and
John right.
says, don't you miss all that beautiful Arizona architecture? No.
And the cactuses. And
yeah. Which yeah. shade of brown is your house? which shade of green did you paint your lawn? That's a real thing.
I know.
Paint their lawn. I mean, it's rocks. They paint the rocks green. I know. If you're from there, you're like, yeah, duh. But if you're not, if you've never been to Arizona, you're like, no, they do not. John?
Well, yes, they do.
They absolutely do.
Yes, they do.
What color would you like your cinder block fence? it's the 43rd tan house on the left. All right.
Exactly.
David went, no, I don't miss Arizona. Not even a teeny tiny bit. Not the landscape, which is as ugly as the houses, or the houses are as ugly as the landscape. I don't know which way you want to say it. Or the weather, or anything else, or the scorpions. No joke. Anyway, David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Sounds like a nice place. I don't know what you're going on about, Andrew.
My best days that I remember fleeing places were leaving Cheyenne, Wyoming after selling books there door-to-door one summer. Not because Cheyenne was bad, but because that experience was so awful. And leaving Arizona on my way to Oregon was like one of my favorite rearview mirror moments. Anyway, go ahead, David.
So, you know, the house I used to live in Iowa must have had somebody who was like from Arizona and they missed the rock lawn or whatever.
The so
they
human put being a, is infinitely adaptable. You can learn to think anything's so
that,
normal.
Well, they put a rock lawn in my house that I
inside.
I
lived,
well, no, on the in outside. The in the lawn. You know, yeah. It was a rock yard, but a rock yard in Iowa was terrible.
That's that is a great statement about humanity right there.
Yeah,
they missed the rock yard in Iowa. They put one in. Amazing. All right, go ahead. What do you got?
It was not good. President Trump doubling down on his call for the federal government to nationalize elections in the U.S. Trump accused Democratic-run cities of corruption on Tuesday. He said if states can't run elections fairly, the federal government needs to get involved. Elon Musk, he says he's the victim of a political attack. French officials raided the Paris offices of his ex social media platform Tuesday. This was part of a criminal investigation into Grok and reported anti-Semitic content and production of graphic sexual imagery. The prosecutor's office also issuing a summons for Elon Musk there. And, well, the best of show has been awarded at the Westminster Dog Show. It went to a Doberman Pinscher. The show was held in New York City. The winner was a four-year-old Doberman who goes by the name of
Apollo?
Penny. Penny.
Zeus?
Creed?
No. Penny.
Rocky?
What is it?
Penny.
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 No. I watched Magnum P.I. growing up, and to me, every Doberman Pinscher needs to be named either Apollo or Zeus.
That's fair. Yeah, so, that's fair.
Penny. Terrifying Doberman name that.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Talk between the U.S. and Iran planned for Friday, but tensions are ramping up. The U.S. Navy forced to shoot down an Iranian drone approaching a U.S. aircraft carrier in the Arabian Sea.
The first air-to-air kill for the Navy's F-35C launched from the aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln. The incident took place hours after Iranian gunboats harassed a U.S. oil tanker transiting the Strait of Hormuz. U.S. Air Force F-16s, along with the guided missile destroyer USS McFall, escorted the tanker out of harm's way.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson, candlelight vigil later today for Nancy Guthrie, the mother of today's co-show host. And Savannah Guthrie, the 84-year-old, has been missing for 4 days. Officials believe she may have been abducted. And could there be more than one suspect?
No clue. It could have been one. It could have been more.
That's Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. We've got partly cloudy skies this morning, a little bit warmer than it's been. We've got 59 degrees right now. And, of course, we will get to our forecast. Brooke Richardson has that here in just a few minutes. Well, the top story today, Pensacola getting a new police chief. Mayor D.C. Reeves selecting Eric Winstrom for that job. Winstrom was one of the three finalists. He currently leads the Grand Rapids, Michigan Police Department. He'll begin March 2nd if the hiring is approved by the Pensacola City Council. Winstrom started his career in Chicago with the Chicago Police Department. He worked there for 21 years. And then became the chief in Grand Rapids in 2022. And Acting Chief Kristen Brown will become the deputy chief. Well, some Escambia County students are facing consequences after participating in last week's nationwide walkout to protest immigration enforcement. Dozens of students at Pine Forest and Pensacola High Schools walked out of class on Friday afternoon. One parent says her daughter and other students received 3-day suspensions for participating.
They knew the risk that they were taking when they did it. But they were hoping that by banding together with so many students that they weren't going to spend all of them. And they did anyway.
That is parent Natalie Champagne. The school district says the students were suspended for violating school policies. The student code of conduct lists demonstrations as a level 2 infraction if they disrupt the school environment. Suspended students return to class tomorrow. A Fort Walton Beach man is facing charges after stealing a donation jar from the Panhandle Animal Welfare Society. Police arrested 44-year-old Tony Salazar on Tuesday, less than 24 hours after the theft. Salazar went to the shelter on Monday asking for help in finding his lost dog and then allegedly stole the jar from the front desk. Police say he confessed that it was a crime of opportunity. The jar had about $100 that would have gone to rescuing animals and veterinary care. Surveillance cameras captured the theft. Since the incident, the community has now donated more than $2,000 back to the shelter. Now, the trial of a man accused of killing 3 people in Escambia County is now underway. Prosecutors say 24-year-old Torrance Sumler was one of 3 shooters who fired 30 to 40 rounds into a parked car near West Jackson Square in April of 2024. The victims were 26-year-old Marquise Turner, 28-year-old Michael Karstefan, and 23-year-old Trayshawn Powers. The defense said no witnesses identified Sumler at the scene. That trial is expected to last around 3 days. A second suspect, 30-year-old Delarian Black Jr., is due back in court on February 25th. It is 5:34 here at News Radio 92.3. And again, it's a little bit of a warm start to our day today. We've got 59 degrees with cloudy skies, seen a little bit of light rain. And let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
Morning weather update. We are going to be seeing rain as we go through those morning hours. Temperatures warming up near 62 degrees for your high. Overnight tonight, temperatures starting to fall back near 35 degrees. For Thursday, sunny skies, high near 51. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 35. Going into Friday, sunny skies, high near 61. And Friday night, temperatures dropping near 44. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
59 degrees, cloudy skies. Our next news at 6. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. French prosecutors have raided the offices of social media platform X as part of a preliminary investigation into allegations including spreading child sexual abuse images and deepfakes. They have also summoned billionaire owner Elon Musk for questioning. Just as Novo Nordisk showed signs of a recovery, another cold shower hit investors as the drug maker surprise pre-released its 2026 forecast, sending shares tumbling. Novo Nordisk's stock plummeted 18% earlier this morning, tracking losses seen in its American depository shares and more than wiping out gains seen so far this year. UBS has announced plans for a $3 billion buyback and posted fourth quarter profits that beat analyst forecasts. The Swiss banking giant said it aims to buy back at least $3 billion of its shares in 2026, adding that it aims to do more. Net profit attributable to shareholders rose 56% year-on-year to $1.2 billion in the final 3 months of the year. Futures are currently mixed. That's Your Money Now.
Is your home your dream home, or does it at least have the potential to be your dream home? Maybe you need to make a change. Maybe you just need new appliances. If that's the case, you need to check out Topps Appliance in Milton. Locally owned and operated, Topps Appliance has just what you need to turn your home into your dream home. Top-of-the-line freezers, refrigerators, dishwashers, stoves, plus washer and dryer combos. Topps Appliance carries the name brands that you know and trust, including GE, Hotpoint, Speed Queen, and so much more. And they have a full installation and service department, something the big box stores just don't offer. They also keep most items in stock so you can take it home today. Turn your ordinary home into your dream home with an appliance upgrade from Topps Appliance. Highway 90 in Milton, just east of Stewart Street.
Join the Great Southern Restaurant Group, home to the Fish House, Atlas Oyster House, Jackson's, Angelina's, and Five Sisters. Today at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel, they'll be discussing Atlas Beverage Class, dinner and an aria at Jackson's, Pensacon at the Fish House, Valentine's Day at the Great Southern, and so much more. Today at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel with Great Southern Restaurants.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
You don't always have time to sit and listen.
That's why Pensacola Right Now works the way it does.
Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby.
Good morning, 5:39 here on News Radio 92.3. It's Wednesday. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. And yesterday we had a good chance, as we typically do on a Tuesday, to talk with our good friend and the sheriff of Escambia County, Chip Simmons. Sheriff, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm good. How is it there? I mean, it's cold here, but not that cold.
It's been cold.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, it's been cold. They have a lot of snow here. In fact, the reflecting pond in front of the Lincoln Memorial was frozen over, and people were playing hockey on it. It's kind of an unusual sight.
Did you go out on the ice?
Yeah. I wasn't playing hockey. Yeah, what? I tried. I'm not a good ice walker, so I think I'd just stay on the hard surface.
Wait, so you did or didn't go on the ice?
I did.
Okay,
but
good.
I was flipping all over the place.
Okay,
but,
all right. Yeah, I think obviously we need a picture for social media of that, so it's kind of cool.
I tried. Let me put it this way. I tried.
All right, fair enough. I'll allow it. Before we get to sheriff stuff per se, although this kind of is the I don't know if you heard this, but we were just kind of breaking the news, I guess, the last half hour that West Florida Board of Governors of the Library Service here in Escambia County in January passed a change to their policies and regulations that now attempts to prohibit firearms and weapons inside the library. It does say except as allowed by state law, but of course, allowed by state law means you shouldn't have a prohibition because they're allowed by state law. At least guns are. And it says staff may contact law enforcement if an individual fails to comply. So if I go into the library with an open carry handgun and the library staff calls you, they tell me, hey, you can't do that. And I say, yes, I can. They call you, what happens?
Well, we'll likely have a pleasant conversation and go about our business, because we went over this, what, 6-8 months ago when the first DCA overturned the open carry prohibition and allows for open carry and concealed carry in public spaces. And again, I'm not an expert in library funding, but as I understand it, they're funded by tax dollars, mm-hmm. which in my book makes them a public place. And, We will treat it as such.
So you guys typically respond to a call, but you're going to come, you're going to talk to me, I'm going to talk to you, and then you're going to talk to them, and that'll be it.
That's correct.
All right, fair enough. That's what I figured. But I always like to check with the law enforcement officer because, you know, they kind of put you on the line by saying they were going to contact you, and I assume same for PPD, although you don't speak for them. I'm sure the message would be the same. Let's talk about a couple of things that have happened here locally. We had a case last week of two abandoned dogs on Beck's Lake Road.
Yeah, we had a pretty alert deputy. He noticed that there was a truck traveling up in that area with two dogs in the back and just took note of it, I guess, because it's cold or because it's a rare sight, I guess. And then a little bit later on, he saw that the dogs, the same truck, or he thought the same truck, but the dogs were no longer in the back of the truck, which, again, they could have been dropping dogs off, could have been doing different things. But he decided he'd go and check it out, and then an individual told him that they had seen him drop the dogs off without food or water and then just take off. The deputy was able to get the dogs in the back of the police car, and we took the dogs to Animal Welfare, Escambia County Animal Welfare, and ended up tracking this guy down, arresting him for animal cruelty.
Good work. I mean, a terrible thing happens, and good work that you guys solved it. We also had a series of armed robberies, but I guess it turned out to be he was robbing them with employees, but with a fake gun. Is that right?
Ultimately, that's what it found out. But if you're the one being robbed, you don't know if it's a real gun or a fake gun, and
right.
You can certainly get charged with it, and you can also get shot by carrying a fake gun. In this situation, we were able to, our deputies did a really good job of tracking down some information. What we used is some of the cameras that we have and license plate readers, and our analysts looked back and tried to see if that same type of a vehicle was in all three locations. To make a long story short, we were able to develop a vehicle, to be able to also develop a suspect. And I believe the suspect had just gotten out of prison back in October when him and a cohort were arrested for, robbery, I believe. So,
wow.
And it was a good job by our guys. And, again, it was a fake gun, but I don't know that certainly don't matter to me. You can still get yourself in trouble.
Well, my understanding, you correct me if I'm wrong, is that if you engage in an armed robbery with a fake gun, the penalties are no different than if you had taken an actual gun. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Other than you might not be subject to the same, like if you're a felon, you know, possession of a fake firearm, is that even illegal? It's not illegal to own a non-firearm if you're a felon, right? Like an airsoft or something.
Yeah, I think it's the intent. What are you using
it
for? Again, you can't be robbing people with it, or you can't act as if it's a real gun.
Got it.
And display it as if it's a real gun. But that's, again, that's, if it's fake, it's not a real gun.
And also to, you know, point to the value of the database that you guys keep of the license plate, the license plate readers, that you keep that for what? It's 30 days, if I'm not mistaken, and then you can query it.
That's correct.
So if somebody reports a crime, you can look back over the time frame within that 30 days and query it, which is why you were able to find, you know, to put the pieces together to find this person based on the license plate data, right?
That's correct. And remember, this license plate readers are only on public roadways. And right. And yes, it's only for 30 days, and then it is dropped off the system.
Your agency has done a very good piece of work this last couple of days in answering the question of, if a bomb is in the water, is it a bomb or a torpedo, right?
Yeah. We get a call that there's this we get a call as a torpedo. So we report that, you know, what we got the call about, and it said torpedo. So it's kind of funny to me that we had a lot of these comments saying that's not a torpedo, that's this and that. Well, thank you, Admiral. All we're doing was reporting what is reported to us, and we are not experts in ordnance or bombs or rockets or any of that sort of thing. All we know is that when we see it, let's not touch that, and let's call the experts, which is what we did. And come to find out, yes, it looks like one of those training ordnance things they drop from airplanes. And so, fortunately, that's what it was. No one was injured, and much to do about nothing.
Very good. Well, which is, you know, still good work, obviously. That's the point, is we live in an area where there's been a lot of ordnance dropped, a lot of training missions, and so, you know, and even obviously during wars and all the other kinds of things. So it's good that you guys are available to take care of that stuff. You guys are in D.C. What are you working on? Because you're up there not just for, I mean, you're there for the conference, which is good. In fact, you're presenting at the conference, right?
Yeah, we were asked to present on a lot of our engagement initiatives. So that was an honor for us to present to the nation's sheriff. So we did that earlier this week, and today we're about to head over to the Capitol just to talk about a couple things.
Well, hold on. What did you present on? I mean, was it like Blazer Academy? Was it community outreach? Was it like, you guys do a lot of things? What were you presenting on?
It was about the Blazer Academy, our Dream Big program, about our movie nights. I guess because we see it every day and we do it every day, we don't understand that that's not the way it is in other parts of the country. And they were really interested in how we went about it, how we funded it. And so we obviously brought a pretty good PowerPoint. And, you know, we had my chief of staff, Whitney Lucas, was with me. Chief Deputy Tommy Leiter was with me. And we answered all the questions that we could.
I love it. I'm trying to picture. I know, you know, when you were at PPD, and body cameras was one of the first agencies to use them, and you pioneered that. And the Blazer Academy has obviously been a huge success. The idea of that becoming kind of a nationwide norm is so exciting because of what it can mean for those kids, what it can mean for crime avoidance, for, you know, deferment ahead of time for the criminal justice system, sort of all the things. I love it. I hope a lot of people take you up on it, start doing it, and, you know, succeed with it. But you said you're heading over to the Capitol today because you're going to engage in a little bit of lobbying. Is that right?
Yeah. We're going to meet with our local delegation. We're kind of divide and conquer. One of the things, even though we don't run the jail, one of the things that we're going to push for them to approve is what they call the Reentry Act, which would increase access to Medicaid-covered services and allow for basically continuity of care for those inmates that when they get incarcerated. And the paperwork that I have shows 60% of the jail population is suffering from mental health issues. And if you recall, when I was the chief corrections officer, we did a point in time, more or less, and about two-thirds or 66% of the inmates that were there were in the infirmary were there for mental health type of issues. So the numbers are staying up high, and we're going to push for them to increase access to Medicaid. And also a couple of things I want to talk about. One is some regulation on the market of crypto kiosks. There are a lot of people don't know it, but there are a lot of these kiosks in small convenience stores and gas stations. And I don't know that I've ever heard anyone buying cryptocurrency from there unless you're a criminal. Now, there may be some legitimate reasons, but this ATM Fraud Prevention Act would regulate the market and maybe help help people from being victimized by some of these elderly scams.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned that the crypto kiosks, and I mean, I have no idea. I'm not into all of the stuff, and so I wouldn't have known if it were. But I know there's ATMs, but that's it. I would not have even been able to tell you that there were crypto kiosks at the Circle K. So that's just okay. But I can see how it could be, you know, used nefariously, obviously, and that's what you're trying to prevent. You also had a thing you're working on with rental scams. Is that right?
Hey, yeah, I do want to make mention a lot of the scams that we're hearing about are people claiming to be in law enforcement and saying you owe us money or you missed a court date and you have to pay a fine. And what they will do is they will tell them to stop by this convenience store or that convenience store or a little cigarette shop, and that's where they would pay in Bitcoin. So that's where that's coming from. So, but also in relating to scams, we have been seeing an uptick in rental scams, basically someone trying to rent a house that does not belong to them. And a lot of these things you can just be aware of. The first thing is pressuring you to do it quickly and or paying through debit card type things or even Bitcoin. Those are obviously concerns that it might be a rental scam. There's no in-person meetings. We've got this listed on our social media platform, so you can take a look at it and some things to watch out for. If they don't want to meet with you in person, that's a red flag. There's no lease or paperwork. That's a red flag. The pressure to act, as I mentioned before. And one thing is unrealistically low rent prices. It's that thing where if it seems too good to be true, it probably is.
Right. No, that's a good point. And if you're ever wondering whether somebody, if you ever have doubts about whether somebody is the authorized, leaseor, you could always look up on the property records. You could look up in the Escambia County property appraisers. You look up who owns the house, and you can verify them with an ID. I mean, if it really comes to that point, right?
Yeah, or you can call us. I mean, you could call us and ask us to check it out if you're suspicious of something. Or like you said, you can check the property appraiser's office. That's a quick and easy way. They have a pretty good access, and you can do some checking on your own. Again, I think they're preying on these, certainly young adults that are looking for a place to live. And if they see something really cheap, they try to jump on it and in a hurry before someone else beats them to it. And unfortunately, we've been seeing some of these scams.
And by the way, as the sheriff was mentioning, there is a Facebook post that you guys have on your Escambia County Sheriff's Office. I'll share it over to our news radio as well. But, unusual methods of payment, no lease or paperwork, unrealistically low rent price, too good to be true, pressure to act fast, no in-person meeting, all good, red flags. Any one of those is probably enough to be concerned, more than one. And, almost certainly you're dealing with something that's, not above board. And I appreciate that. Hey, just a quick thing. You were talking about the mental health in the jail. And, I know you're in a unique position, having been the sheriff, having also worked for the county, and as you were the deputy city county administrator over the jail, and now, of course, you're the sheriff. Maybe it's a longer conversation, but is there big reform that should take place to somehow separate, what I might call ordinary criminals from people with mental health challenges or the multiple kinds, and in partnership maybe with Lakeview? Yeah, I know this is too much of a question to answer in a short period of time, but you have this kind of unique position. Do you see ways that this could all be managed better and or cheaper?
There are a lot of things that are taking place in the local jails and even in state jails where there is some separation. There are programs, there are licensed mental health counselors.